At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu. To the old me, scared and unseen, you're the reason I built this dream. Now I speak so others thrive. Turn my scars into sound. I come alive from the ashes of the breakdown. I don't run, I rise, won't back down. This
bound, every word a step, every truth profound. We don't heal in silence, we fight with grace, softness and defiance, lighting up this place.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
We're reconsidering everything right now. What is time post-COVID? What is truth in Trump's America? Is You've Got Mail secretly a movie about a creepy gaslighting stalker? We can't answer the first two questions, but we have opinions about the third. We on Hot and Bothered are revisiting romance movies of the past and asking, what were these movies teaching us? What did we not even realize they were teaching us? Hot and Bothered is me, Vanessa Zoltan, a pop culture critic and nice lady with opinions, and Hannah McGregor, a bona fide professor of media studies, loving love stories, and also just a little bit concerned. Come listen to Hot and Bothered.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, this is Ed White. I'm so glad you're with me today. And thank you for being here today. And today our author is Shelley Edward Jurgensen. And I just actually did a Twitter on this book because I had just finished it in my book corner, but it's called Beauty, Beautiful Ashes. And I am so happy to have today's guest with us. Shelley is going to tell us about this, her story and her journey as an author writing Beautiful Ashes. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Edna. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. So right away, just looking at this the cover, which is so, it draws you right in. Right away, I see a true story of murder. So all of a sudden, you know, nosy people, we open up the book, we want to read murder. What? You know, so we want to get into it. But tell us about your journey with this book.
Well, it was a long journey. I had to live a long life in a short period of time to be able to have this story. So, I've written nothing before this, other than papers and reports in school. I'm an engineer who's dyslexic. So writing a book was a challenge. I actually, had help from a friend that helped me with the writing. And it was quite a journey. It was a 9-year process to get it to publication. Okay. but it was, you know, a lot of life lessons and a lot of hard things to learn to be able mm-hmm. to have the story. And so, you know, you started off by saying, you know, it's a murder, betrayal, and one woman's search for peace.
Yes. Yes. And
so that's a big subtitle, right? And
yes.
I just to give a Cliff Notes version of the story is I grew up with a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde alcoholic father who ended up murdering my mother and burning her house down. And then things got worse. So it took me a very long time to overcome everything that I've been through. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, there's stuff that I had to leave out of the book that there just wasn't room for. I mean, it's already, you know, almost 400 pages. So, and of course, everybody has a story. And that's the thing mm-hmm. is everybody has a story. And everybody experiences hardships and adversity in their lives. And I felt impressed, and I actually was guided to write this story to try to help others find hope in their own journey of adversity and overcoming, because so many people get stuck. I was stuck for a very long time mm-hmm. until I found my path. And so, now my whole mission in life is to try to help others just number one, see that there is a path to healing. There is a path through everything that we experience, and that and at least be able to share what I've learned through my journey is my goal. So I do a lot of speaking events. I'll do book clubs so that when people read my story, then I can share more of some of the things that I've learned. People can ask me questions. I also, on social media, I try to take a inspirational quote and give a life lesson around it, because my whole goal now is just to give back and to help others. And so this is really a long journey. And
right.
And it's and that's my mission in life, is to help others right now.
Yeah. So you talk about being an engineer with dyslexia. I know I've got to get to the book, but I like that part, because there's so many people that have disabilities, and they, you know, and even us, you know, that have some traumas, we kind of stop and we get stuck. We don't tell our story. Could you share, having that disability, because I've had, you know, I have like bouts of that too. And they, you mm-hmm. know, when I was in school, they taped one of my eyes up because I was seeing it two parts of my brain. You know, they didn't know what to do with me at that time, you know? Mm-hmm. And talk about that disability and how you overcame that in your engineering career.
Well, I kind of masked it my whole life, because my older sister actually got diagnosed with dyslexia. I believe she was in the first grade. And so mm-hmm. I saw everything that was going on with her. And so mm-hmm. I was born a problem solver. So in school, the teacher would be like, okay, we're going to go around the room and everyone's going to read a paragraph. I'd be like, oh crap. So I'd start counting one, two, three, four, five. I'm five. So one, two, three. And I'd memorize that paragraph. So I didn't mess up, which means I didn't listen to anything else that was being said until after it was my turn. And then if the teacher said, oh, Susie, please read two paragraphs, I'd be like, oh crap. You know?
Yeah.
So I hit it. I hid it most of my life. And fortunately for me, I was strong in all the other aspects of my education. It's just mm-hmm. reading was difficult for me, and I managed to mask it, but I excelled in math and sciences. Mm-hmm. I've always been a builder. I'm a woodworker. I was learning how to do, I think I even talked about this in the book, electrical wiring when I was 6 years old. I could wire an outlet. The house that my dad eventually burned down trying to cover up my mother's murder, literally my sister and I helped build that house. I was 3 years old, and I'm carrying bricks to my parents who have more tools than most men, and I could build a house from the ground up by myself if I wanted to. So I have a lot of skills in different areas. And that's the thing is, where you have a weakness in one area, you have strengths in others.
Absolutely.
I have a friend who had two siblings that were born blind. Well, one of them is a beautiful singer, and the other one did radio and voiceovers because, again, one of the things that stuck out to me as a child on The Sound of Music was, where one door closes, a window gets opened, and so that's kind of how it's been for me.
Right. That's good. That's good information. It's good that you talk about, weaknesses and strengths. We all often lean into the weakness a lot. As human beings, we'll lean into it. But, at a young age, as you said, a problem solver, you already knew a skill that you had. You already knew that. It was like a gift. Like, you knew that you were a problem solver right away. So you were able to kind of balance that out. And I know this gift probably carried over in your healing journey as you wrote all of these beautiful stories of 44 chapters. And it's, you had to have some kind of ability to balance that out. What was the first encounter of your healing, in any area?
Well, the thing was, when I got in college, or when I was in college, and, I was basically an orphan then because my dad had gone to prison, my mother's dead, and the vultures had swooped in and started stealing everything. And so I found myself after my freshman year at college, homeless and penniless. And I was at a very low point. And so that was when I first sought counseling. And so I started doing talk therapy as I could afford it. I did it on campus at first. And then I did it on and off for the next 15 years. And I was still miserable. By my mid-30s, I had my own home. I had basically my dream job as an engineer for Ford Motor Company. And I just finished my MBA. And so by all accounts, on the outside, on a piece of paper, everything looked hunky-dory. On the inside, I was miserable. And I'm praying to die every day. And nobody knew it. Yeah. Not even my best friend that lived with me knew it. And so finally, I reached out to a different therapist that somebody else introduced me to. And she had some different techniques. I mean, of course, I did talk therapy, but she did these outside the box, I'll say, trauma therapies that in 2005, she was doing EMDR in 2005, which is now more mainstream than it was then.
Sure. Yes.
And then I did another technique, which actually worked better for me than EMDR. Which is called neuroemotional technique. That's still not even a mainstream, well-known technique, but I would account that for saving my life, truthfully.
Yeah.
And then there was a few other. I did some neurofeedback, which they're also using in the military for PTSD now. And craniosacral and a few other again, I'll call them outside the box techniques. That trauma therapy was critical, but I also changed my mindset about when it came to my faith in God. It wasn't that I didn't believe that God existed, but I didn't believe in, I didn't 100% trust in his plan for me. And so once I changed my mindset and I turned my will and I learned how to just trust in that, things began to change. And there was a lot of, there's a big mind shift change. And instead of getting stuck in the, why did this happen to me? Why, which is a natural question. Yeah. I started asking the question, what am I supposed to be learning? And how am I supposed to use that knowledge to help myself and others? Because, you know, I took a step back and I'm like, okay, what is the purpose of life? The purpose of life is for me to learn and to grow and to develop Christ-like, or if you're not a Christian, God-like characteristics of, you know, humility, compassion, empathy, endurance, long-suffering. Well, you can't learn those things without experiencing hard things. If everything is easy, you don't have an opportunity to learn patience or long suffering or even humility. And how do you learn empathy if you've never experienced anything? So so I started changing and I started looking at things as something that I'm supposed to be learning from and gaining strength in my character. So now I look at adversity, all adversity, as an opportunity for growth that becomes my choice. Am I going to make this a stepping stone or a stumbling block? Am I going to allow myself to be crushed? Or am I going to figure out what I can do to learn and grow and gain from this loss? And, you know, I'm an engineer. So I'm trained in physics. Well, one of the laws of physics is equal and opposite forces. So it's the same thing with, it's the same thing with life. If you want to excel up to here, you have to be brought down to here. It's balance. So those are some of the things that I've learned.
Okay, that's wonderful. You talked about all the I guess the tools that you were given and to get through all of this. What part of the journey did you most use? Like, I know that you said in your 30s, right? In your 30s, you're kind of getting all this information, but I know living as a trauma victim myself, and thriving now, trust is a big issue. It's a really big issue because you don't trust yourself. You don't trust people. You know, the people that you trusted most to help you broke that, you know, and as you say, betrayed you, you know, total betrayal. So how do you begin? What would you suggest for our audience? How did you begin to build that trust? You know, I hear you when you said, you know, that was faith in God, but how did you, the actual human being, you know, start to trust?
Yeah, that's a great question because that's absolutely the fundamental. I mean, I had to decide that I've kicked against the pricks for now at that point, 30 some years. You know, and I had to decide that not all people are going to hurt you. And that was why it was changing my trust in God. It wasn't that I didn't believe in God all along. I just didn't allow myself to trust him because if your father's going to betray you on that level, how does an arbitrary
exactly
heavenly father or
yes.
God or whatever,
yes,
how are you going to trust him, right?
So exactly, exactly.
I had to take that leap of faith and say, okay, well, I've done it this way. I'm miserable. What do I have to lose? What do I have to lose? And and so I just took the step. I took the step. And, yeah. And no, it wasn't an overnight thing. It's not a light switch. The journey is not a light Mm-mm. switch. And it's not linear. Yeah. It's like this.
No.
And sometimes you might yeah. feel like you're going yeah. backwards, and sometimes you feel like you're going yeah. forwards. Sometimes you feel yeah. like, is this really gonna work? But you know, and I don't know if you experience the same thing. Is step number one is believing that it's possible to heal, and step yeah. number two yeah. is believing you deserve it, because yeah. that doesn't all those two things, if those two things exist, don't exist, you can't get to step number three, which is just trusting. So
yeah, you can't.
And that's the other thing that I've learned through all this, is that the whole goal of, and I believe that Satan or the devil or whoever is our adversary, and that his goal is to make us miserable. And if you can rob people of their self-esteem, then they can't get to step one of healing, because they don't believe it's possible, nor do they believe that they're worth it. So people get stuck yeah. because they can't get past step one and two. But you can't even get to step yeah. three, which is trusting God, if you don't have step mm-hmm. one and two. Mm-hmm. But the truth right. of the matter is everybody's worth it.
Mm-hmm. So, oh, yeah. Everybody. Because, you know, I had to get to the point where I had to believe like that God believed in me to do the work. Mm-hmm. You know, I mm-hmm. had to get to that point that if he believes in me, and you know, that was a whole nother layer to the confusion. It was a whole nother layer. Now that I was able to say, I deserve it. Now I have to say, hey, God knows I can handle this, because I'm here. God knows right. I can handle this. God knows that I'm, like you said, solution oriented. I can create a solution. That's what I think is important, that I come from a religious background. I was a co-pastor of a church and actually ordained evangelist. And not until I became personally engaged with God instead of conglomerately engaged with God did I really have a real great relationship, and I was my eyes were opened, and I didn't need outside approval or answers. I didn't need to look for answers, but it's important to really say in all of this, we don't trust ourselves. We don't trust ourselves with the answers. So no matter if we believe in God or not, because I went straight to the church after. You know, and I had counseling as well, but I let it go because I felt like, okay, I'm gonna give it to this, you know, mm-hmm. but I didn't trust myself. I didn't trust myself. Yeah. I didn't obtain a great relationship with God. And I think that's what's really important, because I was in church miserable. Miserable.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Nothing Me too. Was changing. Nothing was mm-hmm. changing. Everything was dismal. And I was doing God's work. I was miserable. Was miserable.
Yep.
Until I made a change. Until I was separated from that, and I couldn't talk to anybody. You know, I was in the hospital. Yep. Couldn't talk to anybody. And that's when God started talking to me for real. So I think yep. trusting yourself should be in there, and should be in that little toolkit. You know, just trust yourself. Start to trust yourself, take steps. I have the answer. I gotta believe that I have the answer because God gave me the answer. And I think that's what lost in translation around religion and all of that. And it really gets lost. I lived it. You know, you really have to dig in. And I like how you, in your book, you really dug in. And I know you probably had a whole lot more to go in here. And I was like, okay, so I see this date. And I was like, okay, but what happened the next day? You know, but I know you had to slim it down. I was reading the part where you had an accident, or, you know, you had surgery. You was having surgery. Can you tell me about that? Because I really wanted to know how you felt about that, having this, I think it's a knee surgery, right? Knee surgery, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know which surgery, because I had multiple, so it could have been the knee surgery.
Oh, right. Okay, so, go ahead. I'm going to find it while you talk about it. Go ahead.
Okay, well, if it's the knee surgery, what was it that you wanted to know about the knee surgery?
Like, you know, I know you expressed a lot of, you know, you told a lot of the details in that chapter. So how were you feeling about that? You know, because I know you just said, oh, I had so many surgeries. What was your feelings right then and there? Because, you know, what was it then? What was it? It was like, not again. How did you feel about God, you know, at that point?
Oh, right. Well, with the knee surgery, I was still living with my dad. I mean, I just got my first car, and it was 2 days later, and I blew my knee out so badly that I couldn't drive it. And even on the way to the hospital, even on the way to the doctor's office, my dad is like threatening me because he's inconvenienced by taking me to the doctor for the surgery. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, you know, at that point in my life, it was like a continual, just as I'd stagger to my feet, the rug would be pulled out again. And that knee surgery led to 5 knee surgeries and a total replacement at 34 years old. I didn't even talk about that. I mean, the replacement, I got run into the wall on the exit of the hospital, and I've had constant pain in that leg. You know, also when I was in high school, I spent 2 months of my senior year in a body cast. I didn't talk about that either because...
Yeah.
So I've had a lot of, and I've had 8 abdominal surgeries. I talked about some of those late in the later chapters, mm-hmm. but it was one thing after another, after another, after another. And I realize now that part of that is related to trauma. There's a book, it's called The Body Keeps mm-hmm. the Score. And
yes, you know, I got that. I love that book. Yes, The Body Keeps Score. It's important.
Yeah. That's and it. So, you know, a lot of your physical illness is associated with unresolved trauma mm-hmm. that you're storing, and it's yep. making you sick. And I didn't realize that until mm-hmm. probably the last 10 years. But the illnesses, all of those things, you know, they would compound and compound, and you would think, okay, mm-hmm. what's next? Mm-hmm. What's next? And so I was just doing the best I could to survive at that point. And and everything was overwhelming. It was just another thing. And with the knee surgery, mm-hmm. I was still, like I said, I was still living with my dad. And and he hadn't had his trial yet or anything. Mm-hmm. So
Yeah. That's it. Very good. So tell us about when you eventually met the man you're going to marry. Tell us about that.
Oh, my gosh. I have an angel. I it's so funny because that was one of the things that I struggled the most with in my mid-30s, because I wanted nothing more than to be married and have a family after I lost everything. Mm-hmm. And I had to wait mm-hmm. and wait and wait, but I wasn't going to settle. And it's not like I didn't, it's not yeah. like I had an opportunity in college where I actually got engaged to somebody who's a great person, but, and I loved him as my friend, and there was nothing wrong with him. It just, I knew that it wasn't right. And so, you know, then I questioned for 20 years whether I did the right thing. And I actually, when I met Glenn, it was through a mutual friend, and I was horrified that I had to have my first date with him in front of my friend and her family, because he suggested that, you know, she introduce us at a dinner at her house. And I tease him to this day. I'm like, who wants to go on a blind date with an audience? You know?
Yeah, right.
But worth the wait.
Oh my goodness. Yes, absolutely. Audience, this is a great guest we have here today, Shelley Edwards Jurgensen, and she's talking about beautiful ashes. And I'm loving everything that you're saying now, and I know that you know, we're wrapping it up, but you endured these tragedies, and you are now trusting God, trusting yourself and trusting God. Can you give our audience, you know, any insight to how taking a step towards trusting God?
Well, I think it starts with, like you said, trusting yourself, but it's understanding that we literally are divine spiritual children of God.
Ooh, that's good.
That is who we are. And so do not let the world or anybody else tell you otherwise. Recognize that spirit within yourself, and you know, just if you can believe in yourself and believe in the ability that there is a path to healing, and trust in God, develop and you're right, you have to develop your own relationship, however that that is, that supports you. You're entitled to be guided. God wants to talk to you as an individual. You don't have, I mean, it's about developing your relationship with Him. And so you know, trust yourself first, and trust that it's possible second, and then you trust in God's plan for you. That's the 1, 2, 3 steps.
Yeah.
And you have to trust in God's plan for you 100%. 100%.
100%. Yeah. 100%. Well, audience, I would love you to go out and get Shelley's amazing memoirs, Beautiful Ashes. You'll be transformed. You will laugh a little. You'll be like inquisitive. You'll also be like thinking about love, you know, thinking about forgiveness. You'll think about some courage, because she does show a lot of courage in this book. And I want to say resilience. So make sure that you go out and get this book. How can we find you, Shelley? You're all around social media, right?
I'm on social media. If you go to my website, which is beautifulashesmemoir.com, there's buttons at the top that take you to all my social media pages. It also has links to the book at Amazon, or you can get it basically anywhere online where books are sold. Barnes & Noble online. I mean, anywhere online that books are sold, but definitely Amazon. And if anybody has a book club that they want to have me as a guest, I would be happy to join you.
That'll be wonderful. All right. Well, we thank you so much for being on the show today, Shelley. And we look forward to seeing more from you in the future. Thanks again for being here. And we're going to say goodbye for now.
Thanks, Edna.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, everybody. I'm Naomi Ekperigin.
And I'm Andy Beckerman.
We're a real-life couple and a real-life couple of comedians. And we're the hosts of the podcast couples therapy.
We're the only comedy relationship podcast ever. Yeah, I said it. And we're so good, we've been written up in both the New York Times and we made Grindr's list of top podcasts.
Yes, we're giving you that high-low appeal. Trust. On the show, we talk to guests like Bob the Drag Queen, Angelica Ross,
Bowen Yang, Janelle James, Danny Pudi, Darcy Carden, Paul F. Tompkins,
and more. All about love, mental health, and everything in between. And we answer your relationship questions. We are two unlicensed comedians just trying to help you out.
So open your hearts, loosen your butts, because we got a lot of laughs
and a lot of real talk just for you.
Download Couples Therapy wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.